Blog Talk Radio.
Stop.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. And welcome, I think, to Naked Soma.
Uh-huh.
Here on the Blog Talk Radio Whispering Channel.
Yep.
So, not sure if we're being recorded or if we're even able to listen tonight. Why don't you give the number, because people would maybe want to dial in.
Well, they can dial in, but we can't click on them because the stupid friggin' website won't come up.
Well, they can eavesdrop.
All right. It's 646-478-4847.
Yeah. And as usual, it's a full moon, and Blog Talk Radio is experiencing difficulties.
It's also an eclipse.
Yeah. We have a blood red moon, a lunar eclipse at 10 o'clock tonight on the East Coast, so all you want those can go out and bay at the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to hide because it's a nasty, nasty thing out there. And it's been nasty all day.
Mm-hmm.
The whole week leading up to this rigmarole. If you've been looking at the news, and, we've got, Kosovo declares its independence, Castro resigns, Andy Pettit does a mea culpa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Britney Spears announced she doesn't want her kids.
Oh, and then there was the naked thing, the Lindsay Lohan.
Lindsay Lohan getting Nico getting their freak on in the New York Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's all fitting, basically, in one big sleeve. So here we are. So, this is one of those weeks that, since we're flying blind right now, and we have no clue when our guest is going to be able to call in, because we can't get on the server.
Right, we won't be able to click her in.
Right.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
Right. Well, she'll call in on the guest line and get the same thing we got, right?
I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for this stupid thing to open up.
You can't even. We can't even get to the live help because the server's too busy.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well,
convenient.
Yeah, this could be one of those shows. That
it already is.
Well, it's 9:02. We're already done one of those shows.
God. Well, mm-hmm. Let me see if I can get this to... All right. I'll just play a little something here to get us in the mood.
All right. There we go. A little fitsy. There you go. Yeah.
You know, I got my sister hooked.
To Fitzy?
She listens to him constantly.
He does movie reviews and stuff.
He's hysterical. She told me that she didn't listen to him yesterday because she doesn't want it to get played out, and then she decided that he couldn't get played out.
I mean, just that one clip she listened to over again?
No. She's all over the site. She's listened to them all.
All right. Well, in case you don't know what we're talking about, our friend Fitzy there, we discovered him last week on YouTube, and he's a comedian that does a very good personification of a Boston blue collar sports fan that basically I don't think he says one sentence without throwing an F-bomb, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm getting server unavailable rather than server.
All right, I have our guest is calling me, so.
Okay. All right. Well, then I guess you guys are stuck with just me while he's picking up the guest. This is going to be
fun. All right. Can you hear us, Phil?
I can hear you.
Okay. Dorothy, can you speak to see if Al can hear you? Hello? I think I dropped her. Let's see.
Oh, no. Going to be one of those nights.
How about now? Can you hear yourself? Dorothy? Val?
Toto?
You know what? How's this going to work? She called me.
I think you have to call her.
Yeah.
Do you have her number there?
Yeah, hang on.
All right. Oy, it's always something. Mercury is still retrograde, by the way. Oh, no, it isn't. It's direct. Didn't it go direct a couple days ago? Oh, we're still screwed. Still trying to get on. Oh, it just came up.
The server did?
Wait a minute. It just went away. Oh, wait. It's teasing me. It's back.
All right. Let me call her. I'll be right back. You handle the server. Bye.
Yeah, okay. Oy vey. All right. Let's see what we have here. All right. You know what? While we're waiting, let me play a little something here. Hold on a second. Okay.
Hey, Sapes. Do me a favor and answer this question.
How will your life be different and better a month from now?
There's ways to guess at it.
You could call a psychic or consult the oracle.
Or you could
follow the moon.
That's right, Sapiens. Us radicals at Naked Soma have taken our act on the road with you.
Just go to the site somaspace.org and click on the link at the top of the homepage.
That'll take you to the page of our...
You hear that, Dorothy?
I'm right there, yeah.
Makeover, we're talking right over the commercial.
Called
okay.
The Somatic Companion.
Listen, we know you're fed up with humanity, so we designed a program to help you rise above it all.
Tell them what they get to know.
Everyone craves the same basic things from life. At 6 years old, as you do at 66 years old, the unseen force that binds us to our behavior is our emotions.
We've assembled 15 years of cutting-edge research into a user-friendly series of 7 to 10-minute daily audios that help you develop something called positive physiology.
Mm-hmm. And by riding the waves of positive physiology, you'll naturally reconnect with your self-extreme, the appetite for change.
It's moon over matter.
Blast off is a click away.
All right.
All right. Well, Dorothy's here, but I think the switchboard's working, right?
Yeah, it looks okay now for the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got it right here on the... can you hear her, or is it better for her to call back and to the line direct?
I think she sounds fine, and I have other people listening in here. Let me see. How does the...
Yeah, just we'll get a sound check on your voice and see if it's better for you to call in.
We're very professional here.
Yeah, right. Well, it's free. What do we want? So let's just give her an introduction. Dorothy Martin Neville is the director and founder of the Institute of Healing Arts and Sciences. I'm not sure when it started. When did it, did you start that organization? About 2000 or so?
No, I started it about 91, 92.
Oh, well, okay. Okay,
yeah.
Great. She studied with Barbara and Brennan and some other healers that maybe you heard of, and we're going to be talking about her program and her method called the Wise Method tonight, so we're on, and you can jump into the chat session, you can do what you want, because hey, Block Talk's back in the air. So let's just get some basics from you here. How did you get started with this information? Like, did you fall off the holistic truck when you were a kid, or did you kind of have to go through the allopathic trial by fire to get to this vast knowledge you uncovered?
There are a number of different ways. I had some gifts, if you will, as a kid, and I trained in graduate school. I trained traditionally as a psychotherapist and became licensed as a psychotherapist here, and by the time I finished my doctorate, I had completed certification in 9 different modalities of complementary health care. So I really combined my traditional training as a psychotherapist with all of the other modalities put together, and patients had come in and eventually said to me, could you teach me what you know? No, you don't know what you know. You just do what you know. You don't recognize what all that is. And I put together a 6-week program on self-healing through the human energy field and offered that and numerous times, and found there was a core group that kept showing up consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And asked why they would come, since the agenda was identical, but they said, you extrapolate differently, you give different case examples, we learn something new every time we take this course, develop something structured. So I developed a 2-year program. At the end of the 2 years, they didn't want to graduate, and I made it a 3-year. It was a 3-year program for a number of years until one of my graduates, who was a cardiologist at St. Francis Hospital here in Hartford, asked if I would become legally affiliated with his hospital since they wanted to have energy medicine practitioners and they didn't want volunteers. They wanted an affiliation with a structured program. And the school I have is approved by the Department of Higher Ed here, and we're affiliated now with 41 hospitals across the country. So we did, and in doing so, he asked that I create a medical internship. So I created a medical internship program working with Dr. Rob Cushman, who was the head of family medicine, and we developed a protocol where my interns and his interns could work with patients in a team medical approach. And it was so successful, we moved into women's health, and eventually now throughout the hospital, and as I said, we're affiliated with now 41 hospitals and medical facilities across the country.
And what is specifically, what is the WISE method? I know the acronym, you know. What is it that you're bringing in that they weren't already teaching in some other way? Because, you know, some other programs exist, like Dr. Oz's program. And what is it that makes your program distinct?
I think because there are a few different factors. My focus is truly beginning with point of onset. I teach about the psycho-spiritual component of physical health care. You know, that the physical disorder is really, really the symptom. It's not the causality. We need to go back and look at that. I had received a grant from NIH to research my work, a grant funding, I should say, from NIH to research my work, and I did it with fibromyalgia patients for that particular research project.
Okay.
And what we did is looking at the spiritual component, the spiritual similarity, belief systems wise, I don't deal with religion, but spiritual belief systems of patients with fibromyalgia, consistently there's a spiritual belief system that their purpose in life is to love other people. And the way they interpret love means that they will protect the people they love from all sadness, from all pain, from all anxiety, from all failure, from all loneliness, from really life itself. And they become, in layman's terms, if you will, a smother mother.
Okay.
But in looking at the spiritual belief system, the 18 points of diagnosis of fibromyalgia, and I give this simply because it's an example, you know, concreteness really supports learning. The 18 points of diagnosis for fibromyalgia are primarily on the bladder meridian. And in Eastern thought, bladder deals with fear. You know, the water element deals with fear. And the bladder is a yang. It's more the masculine, which is the doing and the protecting.
Mm.
And when you can look at that and reframe what it means to love, you really can support people learning to do it differently, which changes how they hold the stress. If you go to point of onset, you'll find that, as we did in the research, in the treatment component of the research, that point of onset was usually when a child was going to college in California or getting married and moving to Colorado or junior abroad or going to first grade. It could be a parent going into a nursing home where there was an excessive fear around an inability to protect somebody because they really weren't under your wing anymore, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it was consistent. It's amazing to see. We had over 80% of our patients after the 12-week. We did every week for 8 weeks, 4 weeks off. 12-week came back to do maintenance. I mean, it's far more involved in that, obviously, but we did a lot of tools, questionnaires, and so forth, and found that over 80% of our patients no longer have pain, or if they were at a 9 to 10, are now at 1 to 2.
Well,
and they've been able to sustain that for about a year.
I want to circle back here because, you know, a lot of the stuff you're saying is going to be the first time people are hearing this kind of information. And the other part of it from the thought process side of it is you're talking right to the antithesis of your approach. You're talking to the allopathic, you know, this is hospitals. This is the epicenter of allopathic medicine is, you know, crisis care, emergency care, especially when it comes to conditions that involve degenerative conditions like this. So I'm just curious, how did you sell them on what would appear to be pretty woo type of stuff? I mean, bladder meridian, fine, but when you're talking about how a person characterizes love and all that, great stuff, but I'm just looking at a white coat, listening to you nodding knowingly and then saying, okay, give them some magic pills and send them away, because it doesn't sound like a conventional model would be receptive to that. How did you get that in under the radar?
Well, there are different ways to do that. One, I eliminate the concept of good guy, bad guy. Complementary isn't the good guy and allopathic the bad guy. When you can begin to
I need
look
a couch just for that one.
When you can begin to see we've got strengths in both modalities and we've got uh-huh. limitations in both modalities. If my child broke his leg, I may be doing energy work and doing some cellular reconstruction on the way to the hospital, but it would be taking him or her to the hospital to have a cast put on. You know, we need to work together as a team here. And how it was received, I mean, in that world of illusionary data, empirical data speaks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I truly believe we need an entirely new paradigm for research. The traditional modalities of research don't apply when you move into, specifically, I can address energy medicine. I was co-chair of the advisory board of a multi-million-dollar grant UConn received from NIH, a frontier medicine grant, researching energy medicine. So I oversaw energy medicine research at a few different medical schools across the country, working with cervical cancer, breast cancer. We did a lot of lab work as well with stem cells and osteoblasts and so forth. But when you have the empirical data, they notice it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I wrote about was to truly create a new paradigm. In energy medicine, our belief system is that everything impacts your energy field. And if that's the case, how can you do control? How can you do an effective control
right.
when you can't pretend somebody's impacting your energy field or pretend they're not impacting your energy field? Everybody
yeah, it isn't
does.
Like you give someone a placebo and give someone the real drug and see if the drug
yeah.
has an effect. You can't test it that way, right?
There's no such thing as a placebo when it comes to energy medicine. There
right.
can be levels of impact, but there can't be no impact. And I think when, maybe because I've been around forever, you know, I've been in the field over 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and I teach at UConn Medical School. I'm a clinical
mm-hmm.
instructor over there, and I've taught in grad school for years, that they may want to doubt me and want to disregard my impact, but I've got enough physicians who graduated from my program
mm-hmm.
who have changed their perspective on medicine as a result of it. That there is, you know, for some, an ounce of credibility that I have, and for others, significant. It depends on their own defense, you know. If they need to see me as bad, they will.
Yeah, and skepticism isn't something that would make the average person who has a grip on this stuff shy away. It's the incredulousness where nothing would provide enough evidence. Because if you use their system, and even, like you said, under the constraints you're saying, where, hey, this isn't the best way to test this stuff, but this is your conventional way of doing it, and I'm still getting results to kick your butt, it's almost like, you know, I'm playing by your rules, I'm standing on one hand, and I'm still getting results, and you're still drugging these people with fibromyalgia and actually internalizing all those things, not just the condition, but the fear and all the other stuff. And you're saying that I have a different approach, that if you give it the light of day, you might see that when a person presents like this again, you might start to see the whole person instead of just the condition or the reaction or the symptom they're seeing and the story that goes with it. And that's kind of the way a lot of disciplines out there, you know, I come from the chiropractic camp, you know, went about trying to demonstrate for some, almost like performing for the allopathic gods, look, we're worthy. But you got inside the whole belly of the beast, and now you're kind of like, you know, part of the peace offering or the bridge that's being brought between the two disciplines, where you stop dropping a lot of the preconceived notions about how different professions communicate, and you're actually talking to the individuals. I always found that anyway. Individuals
yeah.
you can talk to. The professions are political and tend to kind of draw darker lines, but individual physicians, individual facilities, you can always talk to someone and have a dialogue go on and get some you know, some exchange going. So what do you think the and if anyone is tuning in late, we're talking with
Dr. Dorothy Martineau.
No, the computer just had a reaction. Dr. Dorothy Martineau. And the WISE method. Now, just for someone who's not familiar with the WISE method, just could you give us like a 25-second definition of it and what it entails?
It entails, it's a dealing with the holistic integrated spiritual energies in the body.
This is a wise guy.
It comes from, a wise guy, it comes from a perspective that we are embodied souls or embodied essence, whatever makes you feel comfortable. And that unless you deal with the essence of the individual, you're simply dealing with symptomology, you're not dealing with the real issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, like I said, the average kitchen table looks at things holistically because it affects everybody. If you have a child suffering with asthma, say, and the kid's taking his puffer for his asthma, it not only affects that child, but it affects every teacher he interacts with, every classmate he meets, every coach he has to deal with. It doesn't just affect that one child and the lung tissue. And you know, over the years, I've gotten a lot of mileage out of the fact, were there charcoal-laden crystals in their sputum? When someone says they have asthma, because a lot of people are asthmatic, but they don't have asthma. And that whole thing goes for hypertension. It goes for lots of conditions that are psychosomatic that are mimicking the actual, you know, and I don't really have this subscription of disease is disease, but the entity that people would look at and say, oh, that's pathognomonic for this or whatever. And when my frustration personified for this is when the non-allopathic disciplines try to fit their world, especially acupuncture, this is a lot, into the allopathic model and the symptomatic model, and then they take something that was already holistic and they make it into something that's not, and then people say, well, I'll try acupuncture for my headaches now, or I'll try homeopathy for my sciatica now, and it just becomes another modality, another way to sort of fight the symptom off instead of address what's really going on. Why is the body expressing itself this way at this time in my life, at this intensity, and disrupting me and basically not allowing me to carry on any further with this incoherence in my system.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see your work on both sides of the fence, because you're working on the practitioner's mind and the way that they perceive the patient, and you're also delivering this to the public in the sense that they're getting exposed to people that now can see them as a whole person. So how do you get the layperson to get committed to a life that isn't about fighting off disease? Because people think it's inevitable. From 25 to the grave, they're going to fall apart.
Well, part of my curriculum at our school, at the Institute of Healing Arts and Sciences, is that 50% of our program is on personal growth. We deal with psychodynamics. We deal with your defense structures, the filter through which you see the world. And then the other 50% is more the scientific. I mean, it's the Institute of Healing Arts and Sciences. The art is your specific gift and how you bring it into the work. The science is the predictability, that if you do this particular healing, this is going to be the particular consequence. And so we teach a different healing almost every weekend throughout the 2 years or the 4 years in which you, whatever program you enter. Mm-hmm. And the other 50%, because it's about personal growth, you begin to see that every disease has its own vibration. And if your issues aren't vibrating at that same density or the same vibration, you're not susceptible to the disorder. And so they really begin to understand that if your issues aren't the same as what that disease represents, you're going to be okay. And when they see that happen again and again and again, you know, reality is the best teacher. When they can change their filter and look at things differently, they begin to understand it differently, and therefore they are able to teach it to their patients differently.
Mm-hmm.
Unless now, they've experienced it, it's knowledge, it's not wisdom.
You know, I'm going to get Professor Val involved here a little bit, because she shares that background training in psychology, and Professor Val has a particular attitude about psychology as a whole that sort of sheds light on what you just said. So, you there, Val?
I'm here.
All right. So, because the phones are weird tonight.
Yeah.
Now we've done this in Manhattanville and some of the other places where she's taught. How do you approach the new student that's coming in? Not so much the student that's taking your courses and things like that, but the one that's going to eventually become a practitioner, the people that you're training with. And all the baggage and all the background that they come into, with almost like the preconceptions, about just, we talk about psychodynamics, but about their own psyche, about their own personal way of processing things, because we deal with it a little different way because we're using the somatic stuff. So I just wanted to get Val's take on the teaching part of it and then your take on the actual content. So you guys just the first ballot. Like, you're teaching psychology, and you teach it with an attitude. Why don't you tell
what is your
about
attitude,
this?
Val?
Yeah, share.
Well, I mean, it's just a general overview of therapy, and I feel like traditional therapies take a long time, and a lot of people that I have spoken to over the years have said that it didn't help them all that much. And one of the things that I feel is missed is the whole spiritual aspect.
Just right.
Throws it right out the window, and it's, and how does that make you feel? I just about never say that to anybody who I have in my office, and how does that make you feel? They're telling me about some horrible thing that's happening, and how does that make you feel? I need to ask them that. It's stupid. So we try to avoid that. And I just feel like psychology just misses the mark. It, there's good stuff in there, and then there's ineffective stuff, and I think that part of the reason why it's ineffective is that that whole part is left out. And
right.
That's not the part that ever gets healed. And one of the things, because you've mentioned fibromyalgia, one of the things I've noticed about people who come to me with that is that they've had something in their lives destroy them in some way, an abuse situation, a neglect situation, or something like that. Have you found that also?
I found it with my experience with fibromyalgia patients, to limit it to that, is that they aren't good enough who they are. They believe they are loved because of what they do, not because of who they are. So they have to keep doing and doing and doing to prove their lovability, hoping that that will do it. I mean, somebody as an adult who needs to live that way obviously learned as a child that who they are wasn't sufficient. And so they have to keep proving their worthiness by doing for other people. So, yeah, I think it's an early childhood wound. I think that there's a lot that goes into it. They also bring in partners who will perpetuate that belief system.
Right. So you're talking about all the codependency you see with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the tools we use was the unmitigated communion scale, and you know, unmitigated communion deals with enmeshment and codependency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that unless the people in my life are happy, I am not happy. When the people in my life are happy, I am happy. You know, so I really don't exist other than as a reflection of the people I am serving, the people I love, because love is about service. Love couldn't simply be about being who I am. It has to be about the service I perform. So there's a piece in there anyway, a link that they didn't get. And they didn't get it because whoever parented them didn't have it to give to begin with. But that can be changed. I truly believe that can be changed. It was changed in our work. You know, we dealt with pain intensity, pain attention, unmitigated communion. We dealt with fibromyalgia scale. We dealt with a number of factors on that. But in terms of treatment, I was trained traditionally, but I do believe that people who use the term holistic health and deal with mind-body have missed the boat. It's not holistic if it's mind-body. You've got to bring the spiritual component in there to make it holistic, or you're not dealing with the reality of everything we are.
That's the way I feel about it, too.
You know, our spiritual belief system is far stronger than our psychology. Our psychodynamics are based on the spiritual belief system, so let's go to the base.
Right.
Let's go to the source, you know.
It makes sense. We don't want to
keep
looking at symptoms.
No, and truly, psychodynamics are impacted by the filter. And I think the filter through which you look at things are your spiritual belief systems. You know, life stinks, you know, or everybody's out to get you, or whatever that filter is, that's how you interpret everything you see. You know, you see what you expect to see. So if we can change the filter, you really change how they do it.
Makes a huge
difference. I don't know.
Difference.
I've loved it. You know, I've been a practitioner for over 20 years. And it seems to me that when you see the whole person, sadly, when you truly see the whole person, oftentimes that's the first time they've ever been seen.
Mm-hmm. That's right, or they're just seeing themselves as other people have told them they were.
Right, and in the same judgment of mm-hmm. how they've been judged all their lives.
That's right. So, talking about your work, what makes you happiest?
What makes me happiest is watching a student or a patient get it. When they get it and they say, damn, now I got it. You know, that's what it's all about. That's it. When you see somebody come into real freedom, when you see somebody get to live from their essence and not from their personality, they are alive in a way they've never been alive in their life. There are so many people on the planet that are surviving and not living.
That's for sure.
And what I teach constantly is I was raised Christian, and I believe that Christ did not die so we could survive. He died so we could live. And if you jump into living, you're in connection with your passion, your vibrancy, your aliveness, and this is a heck of a journey. If you're getting through the day, you missed the boat. So how do we help people stop getting through the day? Because it's not worth the trip. It's too difficult from their perspective.
That makes sense, too.
Yeah.
So you said something before I wanted to go back to, and now I forgot what it was because my computer just had a seizure. Oh. You were talking about personality.
Yeah.
And how you were teaching them the different filter and not to live through the personality but through their essence.
Yeah.
Is that what you were saying? Oh, it came back.
Correct.
Oh, my gosh. All right. How do you do that? How do you differentiate that?
The mode that I work with, if you're in a doctoral, if you're in psychology, there's, you know, we've learned so many different theorists. The theories that I teach that I think is most concrete is core energetics. So we teach core energetics at my school, and that deals with the five character structures. I don't know if you know core, but you deal with the five character structures. And when you can allow them to begin to see that they develop their personality either to be loved or to be safe, but it really has nothing to do with who they are. It supports who they believe they should be or who they need to be in order to be loved or in order to be safe. And allowing them to begin to see the masks they wear and the wounds they come from, even when they're not aware of them, you allow them to begin to see that they are so much more than that personality they present to the world or to themselves. And that we've all had those aha moments. We've all had those moments when we feel more alive than we've ever been in our life. And unfortunately, many people think that it's almost accidental that they get there. When you can begin to show them they can live there, it's a different world. And through their experience, they begin to trust what I say and what their teachers say. I've got about 30 teachers at my school, so they begin to trust myself or one of my teachers and realize that they are alive when they come from that part of them that is absolutely real versus being who they think they're supposed to be in order to be appropriate or to be perfect or to be nice, whatever mask it is they think they're supposed to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you have to point it out because they don't realize it's a mask. They think it's truth.
Right. Well, they've been fed a lot of...
And they bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And they bought it. I think they need to own the responsibility that they bought it. They were fed it, but at some point in time they could have dropped it. But they kept it because it allowed them to stay safe.
Yep.
You can't be safe.
Some need.
Mm-hmm. Unless you take a risk, you're never going to come alive.
You're all right, I'm jumping back in at this point because this is where I kind of get.
Jump on in.
Yeah, well, I'm listening. I'm just like, wow. You want to growl a little bit? No, I just kind of did. You talked a little bit before about where you're trying to get to the spiritual essence of someone. To me, when someone comes in and they're suffering, especially someone coming in, you know, in an acute situation that needs like psychological counseling, something like that.
Such
say
as?
They go through, you know, grief, loss, and trauma. We're still in the aftermath of September 11th, where you're still getting people that are processing
right.
things, and they don't have the skill set or the resources or the wherewithal to communicate effectively. So that's why. Again, I lean towards the nonverbal rather than the verbal to get them to express and to get them to focus on something that's with them independent of the event, like their breathing or their pulse or something
mm-hmm.
physical.
Right.
Before you go into the metaphysical and the spiritual and the woo and you know, the all the other outer space stuff that they might have, you know, a huge attachment to, especially when you're dealing with constructs like religion, where that might get too personal too quick. And it becomes one of those things where, and a lot of times I see this in chiropractic, where if you don't believe, then you can't receive, and it's all that stuff. And I just,
That's garbage.
To me, that alienates more people than it accepts. And for the most part, people learn when they go into a holistic setting, it's almost as if they have to buy into the belief system of the practitioner sometimes or their protocol or whatever, or it's not going to be effective for them. And it's supposed to be the opposite, where it's integral, flexible, and it meets them on the level where they're at right here and now. It's like a 24-hour diner. Sometimes you go in and you just want a cola. And you're not going to stay long. Just give me a cola to go, and I'm out of here. Sometimes you come in after a softball game on the weekend, you want yourself a club sandwich, and you're going to stay for a while. And sometimes you come in with your Aunt Sally from out of town, who likes to go to that diner, and you're going to get yourself some apple pie and a little dessert. So it's like, how long are they going to stay, and what is it? What's their purpose? What are they trying to get from this interaction? And in the system that we use, because we're relying on biological stuff, simple stuff like the seasons and the lunar cycles are orientation points for everyone, belief system aside, and you can always amp up into those, stratospheres as the person that you're working with becomes more receptive and more open to exploring them, rather than just hoisting them on them and hosing them down with it and saying, okay, you've got your fairy dust, now go out the door. They go out more frightened and confused than they were when they were going to CVS and trying to just pop pills.
Well, I think that would be true, and that is true, for those practitioners who ego is invested in having everybody who walks out the door believe the way they do. If you're not invested in being right, if you're not invested in having the one right way to get there, if what you're invested in is the individual, you don't get hooked into the lecture.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how healthy is the practitioner.
Yeah, and she's laughing because she knows the answer over there, Val, is that in especially when it comes to social workers and therapists and psychologists.
Some of the unhealthiest people.
Oh,
yeah.
They're human lymph nodes for dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that their entire identity is invested in perpetuating that sort of professional exchange where, you bring me you're tired, you're weak, you're whimpering, and I'll sit and there I'm until I hear near my God to thee and go home.
Yeah,
and,
but that's
and
why
there's no
my,
transfer.
Right, but that's why my particular program, 50% of our work is on personal process.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're still sitting in a righteous place where you have the one right way to do anything, I don't care if it's religion, psychology, anything, if you've got the one right way, there isn't a chance you're going to see anybody where they are, because you're constantly going to be looking at where they're not.
Yeah, you're pointing and anointing is what I
so,
usually do.
You know,
you go to the seminars on the weekend, they're pointing at you and they're anointing you. It's the two things they do.
I don't go to many of those. It's been years. Okay. But I know what you're saying, in that unless you're totally comfortable in your own skin, you'll never be comfortable with somebody else being in their own skin.
Yep.
So that's why in my program, 50% of, and my program is 2 years and 4 years. I mean, you can learn Reiki in a day or in a weekend. You know, my programs are 2 years or 4 years, because there is a huge emphasis on, until you get out of your own way, there's no way in Hades you're going to be able to be there for somebody else. And this isn't about seeing a convert. This is about seeing this embodied soul, this individual who walks in your room wherever they are. And the primary objective is to truly see them wherever it is they are. I think that's the healing moment. What you have to sell is irrelevant. If you can see them where they are, you are giving them a gift they have probably haven't gotten before in their life.
Yeah, because most people are trying to tell them where they're not, like you said.
Yeah, I don't really care where they're not. You know, I've lived too many journeys in this particular lifetime to be able to tell anybody the right way to do it.
So for the people listening now, what's the first step that you would offer them to get their head out of, I'm in crushing debt, my health is declining, I'm finab, I can't take anymore, all the things that are happening right now in every bar and diner within 20 miles of this phone, to get them to focus on where they really are? Because I think most people see the obstacle, they don't see the course. So what would be the first step you'd offer them to get them out of that mindset?
Obviously, it would depend on the individual, but
right.
to make it a generalization, I think the first thing I would look at is, okay, this is what's going on in your life. What's going on with you? Because you're not your life. You're not your life experience. What's happening for you, not what's happening in your life. And you may have just been laid off. You may have just been told your husband or your wife wants a divorce. You may have just been told whatever, that you've got a terminal disorder.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's what your life, that's what's happening in your life. What's happening in you? Most people don't know how to differentiate. When you can give them that differentiation, for many people, that's as much as you can accomplish in a session. So
well,
what?
Most people, because the problems are perpetual, they don't have a good line on what's internal and what's external to them, because everything to them is the same. It's one big dirty fishbowl.
But
so
they identify with
the event, and the event is them.
Right. But couldn't that also be because everybody in their life identifies them with their event?
Well, of course. I mean, co-workers have the same attitudes towards the superiors, whether it's the boss is a friendly person or the boss is a jerk, because they're the boss. So it's like wherever they are, they're going to have a problem with their boss because they have an issue with authority, and it's going to translate no matter where they are. So it's like they're not examining the filters. They're examining sort of the story they tell themselves about it, and for the most part, it's reinforced by everybody around them.
But if you're a well-trained practitioner,
mm-hmm.
who is comfortable in his or her own skin, and you don't have anything to teach, you just have a desire to be, and you perhaps are the first person they've run into in their life or in a month or in a year or whatever it may be, who says, God, there's so much going on in your life. Where are you? It may be that they don't think that way, but if for one half an hour or 20 minutes or an hour, whatever it is you in your profession have to give them,
mm-hmm.
they sit with the vibration of that. They sit with that. And this isn't metaphysical. I believe in concrete spirituality. I believe in concrete physicality. I don't believe in the illusion. They may be in shock because they never thought about it. But to sit with somebody who doesn't need to keep talking and preaching about the right way, who can just sit with them while you're doing whatever it is you do,
mm-hmm.
they get a chance to sit in the silence. They get a chance to, even if they don't figure it out, who cares, to experience it. I think experience is far more important than figuring it out.
So is that question, where are you, is that more of one of these kind of Zen koans where there is no verbal answer for that? There's just a pause and say, feel or reflect or sense, and it's more kind of to push them into that mindset rather than to get them to spit out some, prefabricated answer?
Yeah, I don't care what they tell me. Sometimes what they tell me is real, and they're
mm-hmm.
embarrassed because it doesn't sound cohesive. It isn't appropriate English. It isn't whatever it's supposed to be.
Right.
If they give me this marvelous explanation, they're coming from their head, not their heart, not their soul. And so I will say, okay, that's I'm really impressed, you're intelligent. Let's take a deep breath again. What is really going on? And if they leave my office and the most they got out of it, because I'm obviously going to be doing my work while they're there, if they left and the most they got out of it consciously was, something doesn't feel right in my body. I feel completely different in my own skin. It's, to me, it's almost like we've started to break the concrete. And once you crack the concrete, it's harder and harder to go back and pretend I didn't feel a little bit more at home in my own skin in there. I don't know what happened, but I felt different.
I'm going to grab that thread on the sweater here because our other partner here, Dr. Jeb Thurman, just jumped on the line. As a chiropractor, someone gets off the table. This has happened for, 17 years for me. I don't know how long for Jeb. And they get up, and they've just had, the best care you could possibly give them, and they get up, and they will search for something else to check. Just, could you just check my elbow? I think it's my ankle. Could you just look at my hand, on the back of my hand here? Because they're not ready to go out to the cold, cruel world yet. They want one more little holy water thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just, Jeb just jumped on the line. Is he live, Val?
I am live.
Hey,
Jebster.
Okay. Jeb. He's crawling out from under the sea of babies up there in New Hampshire. So this is a similar common experience for all chiropractors. I just want to, Jeff, when someone that does that little routine with you, where they're gonna jump off the train, they're gonna go, they're not leaving the room, they want one more little thing. How do you apply what she just said in getting them to say, that's fine, now where are you? To get them to process something that's deeper than trying to just kind of brush away some other bug on the windshield.
Well, I would be lying if I told you that sometimes I didn't check something else and then, you know, say, okay, you're all set. But I prefer to just have them, I may go put my hands back on them and say, you know what, everything looks all set, you're good, just lie here for a few minutes and just breathe. Because I think that's what they're really asking for is they're asking for a little bit more time to process.
Right.
They just want to sit there. And I actually have a bunch of people. And you know what, Mark, I always love talking to you about the old timers, like how they used to have the adjusting suites and then have the resting rooms.
Yeah.
Like, we don't do that anymore because it's really not economical, but it makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it?
Well, no recovery. Mm-hmm. It's all about, you know, just push them through and get them out. Yeah.
Let me clear the adjusting.
Let me feel nurtured. So. They also feel nurtured.
Yep.
And it's so funny because I have a few people that they just, I get done and I will actually walk over and turn out the light and I go, get up when you're ready. And I have another room so I can take more people in the other room. And some people, if I do that, they're like, as soon as I'm out of the room, they're up off the table. They get uncomfortable with that. So you get kind of the opposite where you have the ones who, you have the three, to me it's the three groups. It's the ones that, no matter what, if I leave the room, they're going to still be there when I get back, and they're going to go, could you just check this? It just doesn't feel quite right. And then you got the ones who really just want to lay there. And then you got the ones that they can't get out of there fast enough because they kind of got their – they were jonesing for a hit. They got their hit, mm-hmm. and now they're gone.
Well,
they don't want to deal
with
it.
People are working on different levels too, yeah.
And if those people lie on the table, they've got to deal – the thing is that the longer they lay on the table, the more they've got to deal – look at themselves in the mirror or look at them. They got to deal with that stuff. And that's a lot of stuff that comes up there after an adjustment or after any
work. Well, you've shifted their energy. You've shifted their energy and all the stuff that they've had hidden now comes up a little bit closer to consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I would say the same thing, and the way I would frame it is that some people come in and they just want to be nurtured. Some people don't know how to take nurturance and they run like heck as soon as they feel like they're being nurtured.
Yeah.
And others, no matter how much you give them, it's not going to be enough. Because they don't know how to let it in. And so you've got the spectrum. And when you're not invested in doing it perfectly, you let them do it wherever they are. You know?
Mm.
I think it's when the practitioner needs to do it perfectly that his or her ego gets invested in the patient feeling phenomenal when they leave. And my work as a therapist, we just call the doorknob therapy. You know, you spent an hour working with somebody and they touch the doorknob to leave and they say, oh, I didn't mention I was raped yesterday. We can talk about that next week. And you're thinking, holy cripe.
Hmm.
You did really good and I'm supposed to live with this for the week. I now have to let this go because I'm not dealing with this.
You're used to drama. You ever have like, that just kind of makes me, this is a little bit the opposite of that. I don't know if it's the opposite, but it's similar in the sense of sort of an unfinished business, but with a different outcome. You ever have somebody like, I'll go in sometimes and I'll make an adjustment and then I'll say, go ahead and go face down. I'll do something and I'll walk out of the room just to go get something or to, maybe it's to get a sip of tea or, and I come in and they're up off the table. They're like, oh, that was great. And I'm like, I hardly even did anything. And I just go, and I'll look at them, I'll go, all right. Have a great week. I'll see you next time, you know. And it's like, and then they'll come back and like, man, that was the greatest adjustment, you know. And they're like feeling like $1 million. And it's like, and that's when, you know, what, like, I don't know if it was BJ or Dee Dee used to say, you could hit them in the ass with a shovel, you know, and they would be,
mm-hmm. yeah.
As long as your intention was right, you know.
Initially, like I said, people are looking for, you know, a disruption to the rhythm that they're resonating with because they can't carry it any further. But it's almost like when something new comes in, it's still threatening because known misery is better than unknown misery, so they tend to migrate back to the old way, even though they know it stinks, but because they're familiar with it, they have some sense of, all right, I'll put on the old squeaky shoes that I don't like anyway. And it's this process, like I said, that especially when you're dealing with someone on a systemic and holistic way, that because you're not giving them the out of it's just your gallbladder, or it's just your little melanoma over here, and we're not just going to separate you from whatever part of the meat or the gravy isn't working right. You're giving them no out. You're giving them no way to hide behind the condition and behind the the suffering, and saying, no, you got to deal with the whole damn thing here. So
package, yeah.
Yeah. So just to kind of summarize in full circle here, what do you think, out of everything you do, because you talk to the allopaths, you talk to the students, you talk to the public, what do you think is the most common misconception about your work that you can kind of like knock all the pins down now and just say, okay, here's the biggest thing that no one understands about what I do, and how can I get all three of these audiences to just kind of leap over that obstacle right now?
I don't know what the commonality would be. I would say with allopathic, one of the big things is it's Lela. If I don't understand it, it doesn't exist. All right? If I don't understand how what you're doing works, then it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the empirical data states, it doesn't work. You've somehow distorted the results. I think with lay people, they either want to be rescued, mm-hmm. or they want to make it far more than it really is. Because they, for some people, the only way they get to be nurtured is to be ill.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to continuously be ill. There needs to continuously be something wrong, because they don't, again, know how to be loved simply because they exist. There's got to be a reason to justify being nurtured, to justify being seen. And they need to keep creating it. So I would think for the lay people, unfortunately, I think energy medicine is this huge world. There's a huge spectrum, as varied as allopathic is, but most people don't understand that. Energy medicine is Reiki, or energy medicine is whatever, when there's a huge, huge variety of modalities out there. And I think that's massive. And I think for those in complementary health, the message for me is that I would give is clearly, holistic health is not my body. If you've got to keep it that way, you need to take a look at what your own fears are, because so many confuse spirituality with religion. And whatever religious you grew up in, so what? Religion is a belief system, and if religious practice supports your spirituality, go for it. If religious practice is your substitute for spirituality, take a look at that. You know, so I think there's each group, if you will, whether it's practitioners or the lay people or allopathic, they have a different fear or a different bias that comes in that supports them staying stuck, supports them staying where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you don't risk and open up to reality, you're surviving, you're not living.
Wow. All right. Well, thanks for clearing all that up for us, because, like I said, you're way ahead of where we would love to be in your shoes, getting grants and getting people
that's
to
for sure.
Sit up and listen to what you're saying. So for anyone that just kind of tuned in late, this has been Dorothy Martin Neville, Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville, and her website is instituteofhealing.com, and she's got some new stuff going on at the 2- and 4-year program. You can check it out up there. And thanks for joining us here on Naked Soma.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Doc.
All right,
thanks,
take
Doc.
Care.
Bye.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Hi. Hey, have you guys checked out the moon?
Oh, yeah. Definitely checked out the moon. It's pretty neat.
It's just about the full Monty right now.
Yep. I don't know if Mark had to disconnect her because...
No, I'm here.
Are you there? Okay.
All right, wow. I need to just, figure out where I am here. Just let me...
Well, we got 6 minutes.
There I am. Okay. All right, so we got a red, pissed-off moon looking down at us in about 10 minutes. Total lunar eclipse beating down on us right now as the full moon is having its way with us tonight. So if you are feeling especially onto, and if you're onto out there, like our guest was, you might feel a little bit like the hair dryer's going on full stun. So you might have a little less juice than you normally have, but you got a little vinegar, a little saucy. Once this passes tonight and we get to the Eco Week, it's a tremendous little kind of like a log flume down, like woo, splashdown, because we're going to be going straight down into the vortex of the spring. So we're heading from the peak of an Anto night tonight in the last part of the exo season, and going right to Philoville. So we're all dancing up there. So basically, if you're on edge, it'll pass. If you've already hit the point of the thermometer broke, just stay away from the sharp objects till the morning. And if you're one of these people like me that is just waiting for the robo-door to hit you in the head and take out the back of your head, you know, seek higher ground, and they won't find you. But if you are a target, they are after you, and they will devour you for the next 12 hours or so. So, you know, if you're eco like me and you got your eyes going every different direction, yeah, it's not paranoia. They're really after you. So just let it pass, and if you're exo, ignore everything I just said like you usually do. But going into this week, this eco week, the emotions are going to be raw. They're going to be kind of like coming to the surface because we're coming out of the core and going into the residue as we get to the spring. So look for a lot of muddy, ugly, raw, sewagey, nasty, stenchy, rat bastard emotions that
wow.
you never get to talk about. Come dredging up like you've been using a plunger in my toilet in my apartment.
Oh, come on.
There you go.
Oh.
Not necessary.
No, well, as your moon sludge report. So that's slotted over to our much more pristine Philo, Dr. Jeb, with his tip of the week. Follow
no
that.
More intro. No more music intro.
Oh, yeah, we got it. Wait a minute. Dude.
Yeah. You got it? You want me to get it?
I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah.
There it is.
This one, right?
Yeah.
Wow! I feel good! So... it's really funny because just as I was contemplating my tip of the week here and I came back on the air, I heard the good doctor talking about sort of seeing things, seeing people or being where you are. And my tip of the week this week, what I've been thinking about is when you look in somebody's eyes, what do you really see? So do you see their story or do you see their... when you look at a person, you go, well, that person's pissing me off, or they're an auto, or they're an exo, or they're a philo, or they're an asshole, and or I love that person. But do you ever stop and look like through deep into their eyes and go, wow, what's my connection with that person, soul to soul? And I always think soul to soul, like I look at my children and I go, wow, was that my brother in a past life? Was that my father in a past life? Was it my... you know, my husband or whatever I was in a past life, if you're into that sort of thing, because it changes things. Somebody might be giving you a hard time, then you look at them and you go, what are you teaching me? And you kind of look at them eye to eye, really deep into that, deep in the cortex of their eyes, right through their pupils, and you see them differently. So this week, just take a little bit of time and just stop. Do that kind of pause, 5-second count, and look deeper into their eyes. And first of all, it'll freak them out a little bit because you'll be getting good eye contact. But secondly, you'll start to see them a little bit differently when you start to contemplate what that person's role in your life is instead of just being agitated or irritated about their existence, or even if you're related or infatuated by their existence, it will make you take a second thought.
Uh-huh.
So that's it.
All righty. I'm going to use this as my intro music today.
Okay.
All right, here we go. All right. I can't stop listening to that ass. All right.
We were stuck on the Fitzy if you joined us late.
Yeah.
The Fitzy's everywhere.
I have a quote about working and being creative, since you're being creative this week and I'm working on some stuff. So I thought this would be good. In my experience, the best creative work is never done when one is unhappy. And that was Albert Einstein, who was highly creative.
Well, then forget it. I got no shot.
So you better smack yourself around and smile.
Smile, so your heart is getting aching. Got the Felix going.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. So speaking of that, next week we have some woo coming on the shoe.
Oh, I can't wait.
These two are going to make this guest tonight. We're going 180 degrees to the other side of the circle.
That's right. That's right.
At the speed of thought.
Yep, Amy and Christy.
Mm.
It'd be very interesting.
Yeah, well, just give a little brief, thumbnail on what they do.
They chase ghosts.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's all you got to know. We're going from the stuff we're talking about tonight, which is very ornate, very nice, the salad fork to the left, to that.
Yep.
So.
And it's going to be great. They are characters, so you guys are going to love it. Tell your friends to listen. We're almost out of here already, man. This flew by.
All right, everyone, travel light and go check out that beautiful, beautiful red moon. We'll see you next week. Everyone here on Naked Soma, travel light through the darkness. Go to chaos. Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Yeah.